and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State on the Michigan Talk Network and all over the world on our podcast. WildMichiganRadio.com is where you'll find those. Absolutely free downloads being brought to you by Conquest Sense. Find them online, ConquestSense.com, right here in Michigan. Davison, Michigan, to be exact. And also NotJustGuns.com. Not Just Guns, located on Cedar at 127 in Mason. Wednesday nights is their auction for all kinds of firearms. And they have a huge selection of new pre-owned firearms and ammunition and accessories, including suppressors and all kinds of other great stuff. So make sure you check them out in Mason, 127 on Cedar Street. Actually, Cedar at 127. That's notjustguns.com. And check out their Wednesday night auctions there as well. Now, the weather has been, you know, we've talked enough about the weather, and we're going to talk about some of the things you can still do out in the weather. Lance Valentine is going to be out on Saginaw Bay. We'll catch up with him. We're going to talk a little bit about ticks today, as I feel like I've got ticks crawling all about me right now. Thought I'd give that habit up. And my first guest, which is cool because I'll never forget his name because it's like emblazoned behind him on this huge TV screen as we speak, Steve Gruber from the Steve Gruber Show, which you can hear on many of these stations on the Michigan Talk Network. Hello, Steve.
Duran, how are you? By the way, I'm taking medication for my
that
tick,
thing?
Tick. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Oh, yeah, you're fine.
I'm fine. Fine. Thank you.
Anyway, as Steve Gruber, because that's all I see on the screen behind me.
That's okay. I understand. I'll get you an autograph later. Just
thanks, buddy.
No body parts. You know the rules.
Right. I do. Yeah. How's the show? The show's doing well. You've been at this how long now? Because I remember there was a time that I was doing that show before it was the Steve Gruber Show, and I'm like, you know, it's a great show. Politics are cool, but it's not for me every day. But this is something so you, it's not even funny.
You know, it is. And to think about this, actually, it's, I guess it's been just about 7 years, which is shocking because, you know, at the time that, the folks that, came to me and said, hey, do you want to do this program? I said, you're out of your mind. I'm not doing a radio program. I'm working on making shows for the Outdoor Channel with Wolf Creek, and we're running all over hunting and fishing. I don't have time to do a radio program. And they said, you got to do this. And then they kept saying, and they kept calling, and they're calling at all odd hours. It was embarrassing. Finally, I said, if you will stop calling, I will do this radio program. Anyhow, it's worked out great. We're on 25 affiliates across the great state of Michigan. We also built a product called the Great Lakes News. It's on 45 affiliates, straight news product, regional news product. So it's become quite a thing. In fact, so much so that we decided to sell Wolf Creek and let the guys there move forward.
Awesome, man. Your lovely wife, Ivy's in the studio with us. And you don't have to talk. You can just wave, do your thing, tap on your phone. Yeah. You know, the mic's open.
Mic's open if you want it.
It is open?
There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
So now you can join us on the show, too. And you've been a part of this thing since the beginning as well.
I have, yeah. I think maybe 3 years now, Steve came to me and said, I don't have a producer. And he looked very panicked, and he was sweating.
Oh, I was panicked.
And, I know that look on him. Yeah.
The sweaty
and
Steve.
About quitting, and I said, you know what, Steve? I got you. Yeah. And so, yeah, this has been a very exciting road, and we do still love to hunt and fish and travel around doing that. And other things, too, now we're getting into foraging for mushrooms and foraging for whatever can be edible in the woods. So
ramps, mushrooms,
ramps,
whatever.
So it's very exciting. But, yeah, I love taking part in the political world. But it is also nice to have a break and get in the great outdoors.
Yeah, we walk around the woods and say, hey, can we eat that? Don't touch that. I get my hands slapped. Don't touch that.
And she's walking around with a manual going, hey, yeah. don't eat that. But that's, you know, look, we have the morel season here in Michigan, which is quite a big deal.
It is the deal. Yeah.
Misek has the morel mushroom festival. But there are so many overlooked mushrooms throughout the course of the year that pop up like perennials.
Sure.
Almost.
You know, yeah, they do.
You've got the Shaggy Manes coming out later in November. You've got the... now, see, I'm blanking.
Well, no. The chanterelles. I'm going to help you out because... spring mushrooms that I find to be really good. I mean, morels are great and people love them. And we did better this year. I mean, I did. I think we've had about 6-7 pounds maybe this year.
Of morels, yeah.
Which is by far our best year.
First time ever finding them on our own.
And people will laugh. They go, 7 pounds? I found that in one tree. I don't care. the fact of the matter is we worked our tails off to get there. But I want to show you a picture from just yesterday. And I'll send this to you if you want to post it on the website.
Absolutely.
Because this is a tree that I found a week ago, and these are oyster mushrooms.
Yes.
And so I went out, they were small, I don't know, 5 or 6 days ago. They're literally smaller than the size of a dime. And I went back yesterday, I said, good Lord. I mean, thank you for the Lord has provided. Can I have an amen? I mean, there was so, I took a bag stuffed. I must have brought home 20 pounds of them. I didn't take half of what was there. It was an incredible find, an incredible tree. It's the Mushroom Factory. And I said, you know what? Because I said, obviously, I don't want to pick them, you know, too many of them and bring them home and not use them. So we're dehydrating some of them now. We cooked some for dinner last night. They fry up. You know, you get them crispy. They are a wonderful mushroom. So you get those. You get the pheasant backs, which are everywhere. You got to find a pheasant back, you know, or some people call it a hawk's wing, and you can find them. They're very distinct. Can't make a mistake with them. But I advise anyone who is going to eat mushrooms out in the wild, first of all, never eat a raw mushroom. There's a little something in raccoon fecal matter that can make you really ill. I just put it just kind of that way because that's make you really ill. Could kill you, in fact. So you cook them all. But I emphasize the DNR, the Michigan DNR, has classes you can take, identification classes. Don't make a mistake with a mushroom because it could be your last one. So I only pick the ones that we are crystal clear on. I mean,
Very identifiable.
Yeah.
No mistakes.
So we like chicken of the woods, which are out now, which are the orange mushrooms. They like grow on the sides of trees.
Sure.
And they're like bracketed. You can see them. They're like, they have like a big old shelf sticking on. There'll be three of them. They're bright orange. Those are pretty easy to figure out. And they're called a polypore, which means if you flip them over, they got little holes in them. They don't have gills. And those are easy to find. Pheasant backs of polypore mushroom. And then in the fall, our favorite mushroom of all, I think, is the hen of the woods. And hen of the woods find themselves in rings around, generally around old and decrepit oak trees. And, you know, the thing, you find one morel, you found one morel. You find a hen of the woods, it might be 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
real.
Oh, good Lord. And they're fabulous. They have a woody, mature flavor. And Ivy's kind of a foodie, you know, loves to cook, right?
I do.
Mm-hmm. And all of these mushrooms, it's just a new experience. And ramps. I don't know where I've been all these years. Ramps are this onion-like
thing. Don't tell anyone.
Sorry.
We let her talk. Yeah. You know, now here's the problem. We let her talk, and now she's telling not to say anything.
Yeah. But you know what ramps are, right? There's like an onion-garlic combination.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, what an incredible thing. They have a unique effect on me.
I know that well.
Yeah, it has a unique effect on me, so the sheets tend to flutter all night. But I love them nonetheless. No, I do. I love them.
That's why she says don't tell. Because she didn't want the secret to come out as to the after
so
effects.
Good. Yeah, they are so good.
Speaking with Steve and Ivy Gruber here from the Steve Gruber Show on the Michigan Talk Network, talking about a little bit about mycology, about the love of the mushroom, the fungus among us.
Yeah.
And that's an Alex thing. I know we discussed this yesterday. But when we come back here in a minute, we're going to talk more about it because it's through my friend Carl out in Grand Ledge. I learned a lot about mushrooms and you know that there are so many safe edible mushrooms in Michigan to eat that, you know, I honestly I'm going to say it. Morels are okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
and I like them.
I don't go out of my way to go looking for them. I don't have to die with the secret spot. You know, I just don't.
If you die with a secret spot and don't tell me.
Yeah. Look, I got all excited. I got like semi-excited because I found some caps, some false morels as I was mowing, and I about wrecked my mower in the process.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh, crap. They're just not even important. So why do I even care? So I went back to that. But, no, we'll talk more about hunting the magical mushroom here in Michigan. Not those
Welcome
magical.
Welcome back to Colorado.
Anyway. Right. We'll talk more about mushrooms, speaking with Steve Gruber, here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Sunrise sitting back in a 40 on the muddy riverside, getting baptized in holy water and shine with the dogs running.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com.
Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Appreciate you joining us all over the Great Lakes State on the Michigan Talk Network and the world via wildmichiganradio.com, where you pick up our podcast or check out our great sponsors like Not Just Guns, Conquest Sense, and a host of other fine people that are on there. We are talking mushroom hunting pretty much year round throughout the drier seasons of Michigan, which really hasn't been spring. I mean, spring 2019, it was a great day. I remember it. but speaking with Steve and Ivy Gruber here about mushrooms, let's talk about about some, you know, the reproduction values of morels, because I know with not just morels, but with other mushrooms as well, because I know when you pick morel, you want to leave a little bit of the stem behind, or, you know, keep them in like an onion bag or something so the spores come out as you go. I hear all this stuff.
There are so many arguments, Duran. There are a couple of Facebook pages dedicated to Michigan mushroom hunting, right? And I'm on there. And if somebody shows a morel and it's got the dirt on them, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did. You're a horrible person. Then I'm like, it doesn't make any difference. I've had people tell me that morel mushrooms, the way that it's designed, you've got the mycelium underground, and basically what you're picking is like an apple off a tree. You just can't see the tree, if you will, if that gives you a visual, right? And it doesn't matter if you leave any. And then we've got this other guy who has a true sickness with morels, Pat, our good friend down in Homer, Michigan, who should be in a 12-step program for mushroom hunters. He should. I'm not kidding. He is relentless about leaving some behind for seed and always with the bag. And he's got a property, 70, 80 acres. He has more morels existing on his property. Naturally, he says these are not places they were 25 years ago when I bought the property. So then you look at that and you say, well, it appears to me that it's working.
Sure.
And everybody's got an opinion. And then I see front page news here. Out of Michigan State here a couple of weeks ago, there's a professor at Michigan State University who thinks he can grow them commercially now, has a way to do it, and growing morels in raised box, I believe, mm-hmm. is his approach, using some Chinese technique.
Yeah, and we've seen actually some pictures online that some people have done that, where they have these giant greenhouses and there's thousands of morels growing there, so they figured out a way, but...
But what fun is that? You see, here's this picture here. You see this picture?
Yes.
It's a garter snake eating a toad, an American toad. It's upside down with two morel mushrooms, on, you know, one on either side, a picture that I took 2 weeks ago. You know, buying them at the store, you don't get to see this.
Right, exactly.
You know, so I think it's great.
And it doesn't cost you $45 or a half
exactly.
pound of those either.
Well, exactly. And you know, Ivy, during mushroom season, spends, I don't know, an inordinate amount of time digging thorns out of my skin that have festered for a number of days, usually with some sort of a pus pocket with me. And you don't get that kind of an enjoyment either. I mean, that is real living.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, she does.
So here's my question. I'm going to ask Ivy, because you won't tell me the truth.
Thanks.
Did he fight that garter snake for the toad for licking rights? Did he fight the snake for licking rights on the toad?
He was like whopping it with a stick to kind of shoo it away so he could get to these. Actually, these morel mushrooms in that picture are called tulip morels, and they're absolutely beautiful. It's really hard to describe without seeing them in person, but
they're little fellers.
Yeah, they're little, but they have this, it's like a white outline, and then the inside is kind of a darker gray. And
almost
blue. We got into this patch of them, and it was very kind of a cool day. It was gorgeous, and we were crawling on our hands and knees to pick these mushrooms.
And these morels only get about 3 inches max,
yeah.
and they're called tulips, and they will come out by the hundreds, sometimes by the thousands. You know, most morels are associated with there's an elm tree or there's an old whatever.
Sure.
These can just appear, apparently. And so we thought they were really cool. And, of course, we had Pat with us. Oh, leave them to see. Those are too small. We found out later they're called tulips. And so the ridges on them are white.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to give a shout-out, because here's what I've concluded. And you talk about Mesick or Boyne City and the mushroom festivals and all the mushroom hunting and so forth. Calhoun County, you guys got it locked. I mean, Calhoun County, which is, you know, Homer and Concord and that part, more pictures that I've seen online come from that county. We found these tulips there. We found blondes. We found blacks. We found it all in great numbers. I mean, that place, whatever it is, and I think it has to do with the way the moraine runs from the glaciers, honestly. There's just a different makeup to the soil. And the folks in Calhoun County, if you're listening, you can just send me a note at stevegruber.com. Because I'll be happy to come down and defend yourself against the invasion of the morel. You cannot surrender your house to morel mushrooms. They're just trying to help people out, Duran.
Either that or he just signed his, you know, flaming torches in front of your house for everybody who lives in Calhoun County that's trying, trying to protect their morels.
That part of the state, I'm telling you, they are loaded. I'm just loaded. And but nobody talks about because they're all secretive. You know, here's the thing. So this is a true story. Of course, all of my stories are true. We were in Boynton City for the festival last year. The guy got up there and talked. He had won the national crown for the best morel hunter for like years in a row. Finally just said, yeah, I'm not doing it anymore. It's not fair. I win every year. And his family's been in the Boynton City area for 150 years, and his great-grandfather's grandfather. So he's known these patches that have been handed down because if they grow there, generally they'll continue to grow there, right?
Mm-hmm.
He finally told his oldest son about one of his patches, just one, when his son on his son's birthday, his 41st birthday. He finally told one of his sons about this is his kid. He would not give up his hunting spot for morels until his kid was 41 years old. That's a true story.
You know, you're better off finding a good walleye spot in Lake Michigan from somebody.
Yeah, no,
you know, in Lake Michigan of all places.
Dude, they'd give up the Confederate gold before they'd give up a morel spot. The generals buried their gold right over there. You can have it all. My morel spot? Absolutely not.
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
Steve and Ivy Gruber here from the Steve Gruber Show. Talking about mushrooms on Wild Michigan. And you know, it's just funny to see every year. I mean, social media has just exposed the poor morel. To the point where, I mean, we knew about them, things like that.
Sure.
But I never knew how many people were so rabid.
Oh, they're serious.
Absolutely rabid about it.
And I'm dead serious. I'm guilty. I'm guilty, too. Ivy, don't tell anybody where we found this spot. Oh, I won't. No.
Tell our kids that. When do you talk about when we find mushrooms or...
As kids, there's three things we don't talk about. Guns, money, and what else? Morel's dead. You got it. We don't tell people about guns we have. You know, whatever. These are things that you don't talk about morels. And they take it seriously because they wouldn't want to be grounded for the rest of their lives, you know. So
yeah, and beyond, you know, the living at home years.
Oh, exactly. Good Lord. But it is funny, you know. And we didn't take morel mushroom hunting. We didn't do much of this before, but you know, it is just turkey hunting is, you know, something I've done in the years past.
Right.
I find this more entertaining. I find it more rewarding to walk around the woods for 3 hours and say, "Boom, there they are."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the two morels, maybe three in my life that I found, one was out behind the old radio station down Pine Tree Road here. It was underneath the old...
Write that down, Ivy.
The old dead apple tree.
Yeah.
Okay,
write that down.
In the rock pile by the parking lot. The other two were at my dad's place. We said, I think there's some morels over there.
Yeah.
So I walked in there. There were. And that's it. That's the extent of my morels.
That's the whole show. Yeah.
That's all three. That's why I brought you in here.
Well, no, I understand. Last year we found three. In fact, we were so pathetic last year. We went on a guided morel tour. You know, it's the first year we've never found any. The tour announcer was like, "Really? Come on, we come up empty. You know, us and 40 other sad souls." but like anything else, we've really knuckled down. We focused on it. Got a couple of books. There's some great resources out there. But I emphasize again, don't pick it up and eat it if you don't know what it is. You know, Ivy will slap my hand, but she can't reach you necessarily. So,
well, there it is, Steve and Ivy Gruber. Thank you so much for sharing mushroom talk.
Absolutely, thank you, Durant.
Love it. It's a good time, Steve.
Yeah.
And check Steve out also on the Steve Gruber Show mornings on the Michigan Talk Network. More coming your way on Wild Michigan. When she walks through the woods, all the bucks come running.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around. I want to feel its way.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Thanks to Steve and Ivy Gruber for... little in-studio conversation talking about mushrooms and beyond the morel, if you will. Yes, yes, world. Yes, Michigan, there is life beyond the morel mushroom. And we had a fun conversation with them and appreciate them joining us. You can find them at stevegruber.com. And also you can find our sponsors, Conquest Sense, at conquestsense.com. Great stick products, and they have some new vaporizing products as well. Make sure you hit us up online. Go to our website, wildmichiganradio.com, so you can check out all the other great Michigan products and companies that we deal with here. Conquest Sense, one of our absolute favorites and the absolute best when it comes to Evercalm, VS1, and the other scents and covers that they have there. So we're going to talk a little bit about ticks now, as we are maybe out in the woods still looking for different types of mushrooms or enjoying our camping and whatnot. The tick report from the Michigan DNR looks very heavy to the southern portion of Michigan, up the Lake Michigan coast, up the Huron side, and definitely in the UP, western UP. There's a lot of heavy spots. You can see that map on our Facebook page, and we'll put it up on our wildmichiganradio.com page as well. But Brian Anderson is all about tick prevention. He's up in the UP, up in Iron Mountain, and joining us on the phone right now. Brian, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing good. Great to be here today.
Great. Good to have you along. And I was just up in the UP last week. Probably the place I would love to spend the rest of my life if I ever hit the lottery. And I know I'm crazy because I'm not really a warm weather guy. You know, I mean, dipping my toes in Superior in July is more what I enjoy, you know, because I like ice cold water.
But that's cold water. Oh, my gosh, that cold.
But you know, it's that's my kind of heaven. But, you know, wherever you live, there are things that you have to deal with, natural things. And we here in Michigan have ticks every year. I mean, they're not going to go away. Some years are heavier than others. And there are several different tick types out there. And, you know, and you can tell us more about those, because, I mean, there's like the deer tick, the wood tick, dog tick, whatever ticks are that are out there. There's, you know, several different species of them. But they're all things we have to worry about nonetheless.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. Probably the three basic ones that we are concerned with around here are the American dog tick, which we affectionately call the wood tick, and the Lone Star tick has a little white dot on its back, and then the feared deer tick. And the thing with the deer tick is that's the only one that has the Lyme disease, which is the biggest thing that you really want to avoid. Other ones can have some stuff too, but the Lyme is the worst that you can get from a tick. You don't want to get that. So, but ticks have an interesting lifespan. I should tell you that real quickly here. Ticks typically live about 3 years. The females give birth. Takes them a couple weeks to give birth to about 1,000 to 3,000 at a time, and their little eggs. I mean, it's pathetic. It's gross, but. Yeah, they hatch out of the egg, then they come as what they call the larva stage. And during the larva stage, is what happens is they get on their first host, you know, towards the end of summer. And their first host is typically a white-footed mouse, because they're on the forest floor and they can't go very high, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When they're feeding off or sucking the blood out of a white-footed mouse or a chipmunk, the pathogens or the germs from that little varmint, you know, the mouse or the squirrel, is where they get Lyme from. They're not born with it. So most people didn't realize that. But all the studying I've done, that's just how it is, you know. So they're on there for a couple of days. They jump off and they do whatever ticks do, you know, for the rest of the fall. And then they morph into the next series, which is called the nymph series. They grow two more legs, and then they are called... They're part of the arachnid family, which is part of the spider family. The next spring, if they got Lyme from that first host, even here's a thing that people want to really realize is they can be the size of a poppy seed. You ever seen a poppy seed?
Oh,
bagel?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And they're just as lethal at a young age like that as they are a full blown adult. So their next year, when you can barely even see them, they can cause you an awful lot of harm. So the next year they look for their host, they attach onto that, and suck the blood out of that for a few days, and then they drop off, and then they, you know, go into the next stage, which would be the adult stage. And typically their last host is generally a deer, hence the name deer tick.
Mm-hmm.
All right? While on the deer, that's normally where they're going to breed. So then they go through the winter time, Then the next spring, the male jumps off, he dies, the female jumps off, and then she gives birth, and then she dies. And then that goes the life cycle like that of ticks. Kind of crazy, but that's how it is.
Speaking with Brian Anderson here on Wild Michigan, theTickTerminator.com is his website. Now, Brian, ticks have a way of, sucking our blood and attaching themselves to us without us feeling it. Unlike a mosquito, when we get bit by a mosquito, whack, we know it's there. But ticks have this way of, they have a chemical in their body that allows them to bypass those sensors, our nerve endings.
Yeah, well, they're so small, and you can't hardly feel them crawling on you. And then the first thing they do when they want to latch on to, to suck the blood, is they pop in some kind of, I can't remember what you call it. I'm not real technical on all this stuff, but they definitely do that. They pop in some stuff in our skin so that it numbs us, so that we don't feel it, exactly like what you just said. So they can be really stealthy about it, But here's the cool thing about, the thing that I tried to prevent with is that the product that I, recommend, they don't like. It's called Permethrin. I think we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can do is you can actually spray it on your clothes, and it stays to your clothes for actually, depending on, what kind of protection you want to mix it with. You just mix it with water in a spray bottle. It's really simple. Even I can do it, So, it can last up to 3 to 6 months on your clothes and go through the washing machine, like 6, 8, 10, 12, 24 times.
That's,
so it's some great stuff.
That's pretty good. Let me ask you, Brian, speaking of Brian Anderson, theTickTerminator.com is his website. Ticks have natural enemies. I mean, I hear things about possums eating them, but I mean, are there other animals, other things feeding on them constantly?
Oh, yeah. Possums will eat them. Poultry, like guinea hens, chickens, turkeys, some spiders and insects like that, too. There was a study done out in the state of Maine a couple years ago where they studied turkeys, and they say that turkeys have such a voracious appetite that when they go through the woods, they're like vacuum cleaners practically. And the study was kind of showing that turkeys eat some of the natural enemies of a tick. And so they were kind of saying, well, partly the reason for tick's explosion in numbers is because some of their natural enemies have been devoured by the turkey. So,
well, fine.
We have a lot of turkeys up here, too. They really expanded a lot since the 80s.
Yeah, our good friend Al Stewart, we blame him because he's the upland game bird specialist with the Michigan DNR. And they have done just a fantastic job with the reintroduction of turkey here in Michigan.
Oh, wonderful.
But now to find that out makes me want to hunt them even more come springtime, which I love doing anyway. But we're speaking with Brian Anderson here. Tick talk, if you will, with the Tick Terminator. And I want to talk more in the next segment, Brian, about how the permethrin is working with our clothes with the spray on. But right now, you mentioned the deer tick. And real quickly, if we can, what are some of the symptoms of Lyme's disease? We know to look for that bullseye circle after we've been bit, but what are some of the symptoms, hopefully, that we'll not have to notice before we figure out we've got the disease?
Yeah, definitely the bullseye is something but that's only on about maybe 50% of the cases.
Okay.
Normally people realize once they get bit, and let's say achy joints, flu-like symptoms, just kind of feeling really crappy when you probably shouldn't be, let's say in the middle of summer.
All right, hang on, Brian. Sorry I asked you that question too soon. We got to go against the break. We'll re-ask it at the next segment here on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, being brought to you by Not Just Guns. And they are not just guns. They are ammunition. They are supplies. They are accessories, everything you need. But they are also firearms, handguns, shotguns, new, used, and they're big Wednesday night auctions. Make sure to get in on those. Online, notjustguns.com is where you can find the auctions or go see them in person on Cedar Street in Mason at 127. Those guys are doing a great job, and they are definitely the good guys in the gun business. Now we're back with Brian Anderson, the Tick Terminator, here on Wild Michigan, talking a little bit about the symptoms and the signs of Lyme disease. And unfortunately, we got caught up against the last segment. We have plenty of time to talk now. Now, we mentioned the bullseye. That's the first indicator that we've been bit by a tick. And then, Brian, you go on to say about muscle aches and flu-like symptoms. Usually during a time of year where we're not accustomed to feeling like that, usually in the summertime.
Right, yeah, because technically some of you will get bit, let's say, now, and their symptoms, they may be quick, you know, to come about, but they may take even a week or so to really come about, you know, after they've been bitten. Sometimes people don't even realize they've been bitten. So the best thing to do is once people realize these symptoms, you know, like the bullseye, or let's say if they get that, or the achy joints, the flu-like symptoms, and just feeling really crappy and run down, the most important thing is to get it treated right away. And not all doctors are familiar with it. They're getting more and more familiar with it, especially around here. And Lyme needs to be treated before it can even be positively identified, because you can almost treat the symptoms because they're so common nowadays. And doxycycline is typically what they will normally use for that. And usually one round of that can just about, you know, wipe it out of you, which is wonderful. But the problem is that a lot of people say, oh, man, I'm tough. You know, I can just, you know, I'll work through this. And guess what? After a month or two, then it starts to really get in the system. And then it's really, really tough to get rid of. I had a friend almost die from this a couple of years ago. And several people have. But he was so sick. That was part of my motivation for, you know, doing actually what I'm doing right now, kind of like on a mission of letting people be aware that there's some way that we can have a fighting chance against these things. But, I mean, the expense of Lyme is just thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's not covered by insurance. So the few bucks that somebody can spend on permethrin and prevention, you know, what is it? Saying an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure or something like that.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? Oh. I tell you, I've encountered ticks. We were up in the UP fishing. A little thing fishing a river off of 2 there. And we got back to our cabin. And, I'm lying in bed. And I felt something crawling up my back, up the back of my neck. And I grabbed it. I looked at it. It was a tick. And believe me, those things are near impossible to kill with your hands. Absolutely. Yep. And then I woke up because, of course, I had the Wilbers by this time. got my buddy, Russ. I said, hey, Russ, check yourself right now for ticks. Right. I just got one on the back of my neck. He pulls his shirt off. He's got 4 of them crawling around. They had not set in yet. And, you know, and he got them all off. Thank goodness. But later on, at a different point in time, I think it was just last year, he had one that he got bit by. It was on his back, didn't realize it, and it got to like the size of a dime. It got huge.
I know.
And fortunately, he didn't suffer any repercussions from that. But what are some of the places that they like to hop on us? I mean, I know tall grass is definitely one of them, but there's got to be some forest floor and things like that they're getting on us as well.
Ticks are traditionally going to be in a more of a moist area. They're not normally going to be out in the middle of a field because they need the moisture. They need a dampness in order to thrive. And they're normally going to be on short grass and brush, stuff like that. They do not drop out of trees. I mean, you know, think how much work it would take a tick to crawl up a tree and go out to a branch. They don't do that. They're on the – so if you had one on the back of your neck, it probably got on around your calves or your knees.
Oh.
And crawled all the way up there. You just didn't know it.
Great.
You know? So that's how they are, you know? You just can't hardly see them.
Now, let's talk about... I'm sorry, go ahead.
The bigger ones are the better ones to have on you because they don't have Lyme anyways. It's the little ones, the deer ticks, and the smaller ones, they're more affected by the permethrin anyways, which is a great thing because they're smaller.
Now, the permethrin, you know, you say you can mix it with water, you spray it on your clothes, and he had borrowed my good friend Russ had borrowed my clothes to go bear hunting in Canada because I had a scent lock outfit, and he wanted to wear scent lock, and I was a little concerned at first about, you know, spraying something on scent lock because, I mean, you got to take care of that in a special way to keep its, you know, properties in order, but the permethrin is not something that's going to affect that.
It's odorless, yeah. Hunters love it, yeah. I sprayed on my Eve in a, you know, deer hunting clothes last fall because they can be around. I mean, they have a longer season than what a lot of people give them credit for. I mean, technically they could appear in February when it gets to 40 degrees and a little thaw, you know.
Wow,
they
no kidding. Come out.
So they hunker down underneath the snow, and they basically hibernate for the winter. But they have a long season. I mean, actually, May is Lyme Awareness Month. That's when they're really coming out.
Mm-hmm.
They're out all the time, but I always tell people it only takes one to really screw up your life.
Yeah, and it can. It's not something that goes away that easily, especially if you don't treat it. And it's something you need to look at immediately should you see that bullseye or start feeling those symptoms. Again, the body aches and the flu-like symptoms, especially around the spring and summertime where it's not that common. Brian Anderson is our guest here. The TickTerminator.com is his website. Now, you also sell permethrin, correct?
Yes, yeah. I've tried a couple different ones, and there's only a couple different ones out there. It's a very, very small market. But what I recommend on my website here is called a duration 10%. And what the cool thing is about that is it's a concentrate. It's the only concentrate on the market that's, you know, EPA registered for clothes. All right. So it's really good. What you do is it comes with directions where somebody just mixes it in a quart bottle with water. And here's the thing. Let's say a mom's sending the kids off to camp for a week. She could mix it with just for a 3-week coverage, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Their clothes to protect them. Let's say somebody wants it for 6 weeks and 6 washings, then they would put 2 ounces in the quart. Let's say you want it for 12 weeks and 12 washings, 3 months, you could mix 4 ounces in there. Let's say you wanted it for 24 weeks and 24 washings, then you could mix the whole 8-ounce bottle in there. So it kind of depends on how much protection you want for your particular needs.
And that seems to go a long way. I mean, quite a long way.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Now, you also have a DEET product that you sell on your website. It's a 30%. Now, I kind of chuckle. It's an uncomfortable chuckle, but I remember going back in the days when you had the Muskol with 100% DEET. And, you know, you're spraying it around all willy-nilly. But, I mean, we have learned that you really need to be careful with DEET.
That's a little more harsh, but it's almost an industry standard. That's why I have it on there.
Mm-hmm.
There's another product on there that is much more mild called Picaridin. And I have it in the dosages, if you want to say, that are generally accepted. You know, like the Picaridin is only 20%. The DEET is only 30% because, you know, it really doesn't need to be 100%
right.
From all I've read. So I just carry the more mild amount of 30%, which is plenty. But those are for the skin. The permethrin that we're just talking about is only for your clothes. If you get it on your skin, it doesn't do any good because the oils in your skin kind of just naturally dissipate it. So it's just for clothes, but it has a sticking power. Our military's been using it for almost 30 years. So if that tells you anything.
Well, yeah, it's thanks for sharing.
But, it's huge.
But yeah, it's and I'm glad that we've got all this information out. Again, there is a map from the Michigan DNR on our website. Or, I'm sorry, our Facebook page, which we will put to the website, of the severity of the tick problems that we could be having this year, where the densities are going to be, and of course the western UP is lousy with it. Your area, Iron Mountain area. Is going to be thick with it. And, of course, the whole coastline from Michigan down around the bottom part of the southern lower peninsula up into the Huron area again. So, and then, you know, some of the other places are less apt to have severity, and then there's some that are just like, you know, tickless. But Brian Anderson, appreciate you joining us. TheTickMagnet.com is where you can find us, man. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge.
The Tick Terminator.
Oh, yes, Tick I knew I'd get something wrong today. I blame Steve Gruber. He was in here earlier.
Thanks.
to TickTerminator.com. Brian Anderson. Thanks to Steve Gruber and Ivy Gruber. SteveGruber.com, host of the Steve Gruber Show. All this information is on our website, WildMichiganRadio.com.